Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk. And I am live from the WHAM studios in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I could tell that because as I drove here, what do we got? A football game today, don't we, Derek?
Yeah, Michigan and Northwestern right here in Ann Arbor starting at noon.
Now, that used to be a gimme for Michigan, but I want to say Northwestern sometimes surprises people, don't they?
Yeah, sometimes they can sneak up on a team if they're not prepared. Michigan should win comfortably, though. They're favored by 23.5 points, but Michigan was favored by 20-plus earlier this season against Rutgers and only won by a touchdown, so anything's possible.
Yeah. You know, I remember the days. This is an old coach that you may not remember. His name was Alex Agassi, and he was the coach of Northwestern, but then he became the Purdue coach back when I was there in the mid-70s. So they actually, back in the 60s, they had some good teams back then, too. So, you know, of course, that's 50 years ago. So, well, so we also talk about the Lions. They had some good teams 50 years ago, too, but not yet. So what is going to happen this week? I'm pumped for the Rams-Lions game with the Goff versus Stafford matchup. What do you think?
It's going to be an annihilation, and not for the team we want to win here in Michigan. The LA Rams, they're going to give the Lions a big butt-whooping tomorrow. It wouldn't surprise me if the Lions lose by at least 4 touchdowns, because the Lions are basically up a creek without a paddle and then some, and the Rams are riding high.
Yeah, I know. I see that. And it just goes to show that, you know, Stafford, he, no matter how hard he tried here, he just couldn't get it together with the staff and the talent that the Lions had. But you put him on another team, and he's doing great this year. So,
yeah, he went to a coach who knows how to utilize his strength, and that is his strong arm. And that certainly has helped the Rams to a fast start this season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got to say, I'm torn because I do like Matthew Stafford. And so I'm kind of, I'll be happy either way, whoever wins, because Stafford, I'm happy to see him doing well out there. And if the Lions somehow should pull it off, it'll be like, ha, you know, so we'll see. But I guess I won't hold my breath tomorrow. So let's see. We are talking about gun shows here. There are a couple here in Ann Arbor. Actually, there's one in Ann Arbor. Huron Gun Collector Show, and that's at the Washtenaw Farm Council grounds. I like to go to that each time. Won't go today because that'll be about when I go there. That'll be, if I would go, it'd be after the show, and that'll be about when, you know, football crowds and stuff will start becoming back. I'm not going to deal with that. I'll go tomorrow. Let's see. We also have the original Grand Rapids Gun and Knife Show at the 4 Mile Showplace in Grand Rapids. And in Ohio, the Mansfield Gun Show, the Springfield Gun Show, and the Akron Area Gun Show. To my listeners out in Jefferson City, you have the Jefferson City Shooting Sports and Outdoor Show at the Eagles Club. And let's see, also the RK, this one made me laugh. I got to say, I'm looking here. You know, when you look up something on the web and they put in one of these pictures that's like eye candy, that they're teasing you to go to somewhere else. Well, when I copied this onto my page, there's no reason for me to copy it, but I just did. In between the RK Kansas City Gun Show and the West Plains Civic Center, West Plains, Missouri Gun Show, is a picture of Adrian Barbeau in like a bikini top with Kurt Russell. Now, there's no, it says discretion advised, behind the scene photo trailer. There's no reason for me to keep it there, but I just kind of like it, okay? You guys remember who Adrian Barbeau is. She looks very tempting in a top like that. So let's see. And the New York has the Duffel Bag Military Show in New York at the Patterson Recreation Center in Patterson, New York. So We have a whole bunch of them out there to go to. Let's see, 761,000. So we're closing in over 750,000, and that's going to come up in another story here in a minute. But over 750,000 of CPL holders in Michigan, 761,741. Let's see, things that don't suck. Now, this is 2 weeks ago I talked about this, and I got a call from Theron after the show last week. And he said, what is the name of that company that has that that Glock magazine for the Glock 26 that'll hold 15? Well, you know what? I misspoke when I said that. It's only for the Glock 43 and 48. So I looked it up and I sent him a note. But him always being on top of things Glock related, he sent me back a note and he said the ETS company that's Elite Tactical Systems makes Glock mags for the 26 and they hold 15 rounds. So that's actually outstanding. And they are kind of a clear polycarbonate. They're pretty cool. So at any rate, he corrected me on that. And if he's out there listening and working on his treadmill, thanks for that information. And I appreciate it because I didn't want to mislead anybody that they upped from 10 rounds to 15 on the 43 and 48. So let's see, what's on your hip today? I am wearing a Charter Arms Bulldog in 44 Special. That's an unusual gun, and it's a snub nose 2-inch barrel 44 special with a very heavy bullet, like 240 grain bullets, and I loaded a bunch for that. Although I use factory rounds, I think I got Speer Gold Dots in there right now, and I'm wearing it in with a Crossbreed Super Tuck Deluxe that a friend gave me, but it was actually made for a J-frame, but the Charter Arms Bulldog and the whole series of snub noses essentially fit the same holsters that a J-frame does or a Ruger SP-101. So anyway, kind of neat that I'm wearing an inside the waistband for a revolver instead of outside. Let's see. Just this week, Ruger announced its first new Marlin rifles. They're showing it off. They actually have a picture of all the workers at Ruger there, and they are holding the first one, and it's a model 1895, which is pretty cool. That's actually in 4570, and it's got a one of those really cool looking laminated. Like gray and white and black and light gray, you know, it's a laminated stock. And when they carve it, then it looks like a wood grain pattern. It's just really cool. And so they're holding it right there. And there's a person in front wearing an Ohio State t-shirt from, and this was in Mayodan, North Carolina, but they're still wearing an Ohio State t-shirt. But at any rate, they are out there showing off their Marlin 4570, and it is a beauty. It is, I want to say the fit and finish is beautiful on it, and they are planning, after they roll out this 1895 SBL, the next one that they're likely to do will be a 336, which will be in 3030. So hooray, hooray, the Marlin lever actions are back, okay? Let's see. The report is, and this just came out, that there are over 21.5 million CCW holders or CPL holders in the United States now. Now, by the way, that doesn't include all the states that are now, constitutional carry, no permit required, and things like that. So when you talk about 21.5 million people have gone to the effort to take the training, pay the money, and get their CPLs or their CCWs, that's concealed pistol license or concealed carry weapons permit. That is a lot of people exercising their Second Amendment rights. When you think about it, okay, how many people we got? 300 and some million people in the country, and 20 million of them have gone CPLs. And look, there's actually, you know, a couple hundred million guns. There's actually more guns in the country than there are people in the country. So you know there's a lot of other people armed out there. And it's interesting when you look at the actual map, the states that have the largest percentage of concealed adults with concealed handgun permits. It's kind of interesting. Now, you obviously can see the ones like, what are we looking at? Let's see, we've got Maryland and New York and California that have less than 2%, okay? So that doesn't surprise us at all. But when you look at the states that are above 15%, Iowa? Really? Indiana? And then I'm not surprised at all by Alabama and Georgia, but that's above 15%. And for 10 to 15%, you've got Washington State. Well, I guess that's everywhere except Seattle, where they're really anti-gun. But Washington State is up there in 10 to 15%. Utah, Colorado, South Dakota, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Florida, South Carolina, all of those states have 10 to 15% of the adults have concealed handgun permits. Now you go down to the 5 to 10% range, and you got a whole bunch of, you know, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin, I mean, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Some of those states are all, you know, and a lot of the Midwest or the Western states, Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Wyoming, Nebraska, North Dakota, and then down in Arizona. They're all in the 5 to 10%. And then in the 2 to 5%, the New Mexico, Mississippi, Kansas, Missouri, Illinois. But Illinois is actually catching up quickly. I expect them to be higher pretty soon. So the thing is, this is a neat graphic to look to see where the concentration of concealed handgun permits are. And, of course, where the lack of them are, the yellow states, which are California, New York, and Maryland. And then there's probably New Jersey and what else? Well, actually, some of the other ones are all pretty, even these New England states like Maine and New Hampshire. Now, Vermont is a constitutional carry state, so they don't even have a permit. But so, you know, the number could be 100% there. So at any rate, let's see. There was an interesting article on, let me see here. State Supreme Court accept second. Oh, no, nope, that's not the right article. I'll have to get to the other one. Here's one that I found interesting today. Springfield Armory. Now, this is not the Springfield Armory of the old days, like back when they made them in 1903 or they made the Garands and stuff like that. This is a company that's actually in Illinois, and I don't know if they have moved yet. They're talking about moving. But they've been teasing out there about some of the guns that they make, because they make, you know, they still make an M1A, which is like a Garand with a semi-automatic with a detachable box, an M1A. It's like an M14. And they make a lot of cool guns. I like their Springfield XDs and all sorts of things, XDSs. I have several of them. But one of the guns that they are teasing about is they're going to make an announcement on Monday. An announcement for a major new product that they're coming out with. Now, I can't wait to see, but they actually put out a teaser picture, and it shows a guy working at a workbench, and on the workbench, and it notes that there's, they're saying that they are going to make a major announcement, and on this workbench, there is a picture of John Moses Browning, okay, who is famous for his many of his, you know, everything from the M2 and M19s, all the machine guns that were used in World War I and II and stuff like that. But also, he was famous for making the Browning High Power, which is the gun that, you know, this you want to start a battle, Okay, a bar fight. Okay, you talk about a 1911, which was also one of his designs, but it's an outstanding design in 45 cal. And then in 1935, he came out with the Browning High Power. And he claims that, and people say this is the gun the 1911 should have been, okay, which is a double action, 9mm, and it I want to say they talk about it in glowing terms. And then they went out of production several years ago. And so here we have Springfield Armory with a teaser out there saying they're going to have a major announcement, and there is a picture of John Moses Browning on the shelf, the top shelf of this guy's workbench, with a clock next to it, and the clock says 1935, which is the year that he introduced the Browning High Power. So everybody's thinking, oh man, is Springfield coming out with a new Browning High Power? Well, that would be really cool, because there's a lot of people who love that gun and still like it, I want to say, as a semi-automatic for competitions and things. A lot of people like the polymer guns and stuff like that, but people still like the Browning High Power. So I cannot wait till Monday to find out if there's an announcement and if Springfield's bringing back the Browning High Power. So that would be pretty cool. Let's see. And here's another product. I try to talk about products that I think are pretty neat. And this is one that it was just posted this week, too. It's a new Crimson Trace product. And I talked about some red dots and things a couple weeks ago. They came out with some smaller red dots that are good for use on pistol caliber carbines and also on pistols themselves for like 22s, like bowling pin matches and things like that. And so Crimson Trace has got these new products out there, and they are reasonably priced. Well, they just came out with a new one that they call the LS250, and it's called a laser saddle. Now what is that for? Well, I want to say there are a lot of people who, when you talk about somebody going, I'd like a gun for self-defense. I'm not going to carry it. I don't know that I want it to be a pistol, but I want a gun for self-defense. And a lot of people turn to the tactical kind of shotguns or just a shorter-barreled shotgun that's easy to maneuver and things like that. And, we've got Derek, have we got a phone call here? I see I don't have my call screen up. I'll have to do that at the break. Tell me who we got.
Yeah, Ed's on the line from Ypsilanti about the Browning High Power.
Okay. Hi, Ed from Ypsilanti. You know what? A rookie mistake here. I did not put up my call screen. So what do you want to talk about with the High Power today?
Well, you were mentioning the Springfield Armory coming out with a clone. And I was given the impression that there was a Turkish company that's making one that's got a lot of high reviews already. I've been kind of interested in the High Power a while since my best friend who passed a couple years ago showed me his. I was actually hoping to inherit his, but his daughter did instead.
Yeah, there is a company. I don't remember if it's Stoger or who. I'll have to look that up. But there is a company that is making them, and I have heard of them and that people are. I'll look it up at the break and see which one it is. But it does have good reviews. But I have a feeling that what happens with the a lot of the Turkish guns is they are like a grade two kind of gun in that they tend to have good function and stuff, but they don't have the polish and the fit and finish and stuff like that that the American-made guns do. And
yeah, well, I buy American anyhow. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And if these are going to be made in America.
Yeah, and what happens is these the Turkish guns, are, in many cases, like Stoger over there has made one called the Cougar, and they make a bunch of shotguns and stuff. They make outstanding guns over there, but they sacrifice a little bit in fit and finish and craftsmanship, not from a function standpoint, but from an aesthetic standpoint. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. So if you're looking for, I'll look up to see which one the which one is making the if it's Stoger or one of the other Turkish companies, but they do have good guns. But I think I'm interested in this the one from Springfield because I know they make some outstanding 1911s. I know they do the same with Browning High Power. So.
Hey, another question, if I might. Do I get a bonus question?
Oh, sure you do. Go ahead.
Well, I bought, probably overpriced, bought some ammo. So I'm well stocked on ammo right now. I managed to get it when I saw it available. And so I haven't been shopping, but lately I've been getting a lot of emails from companies offering me, you know, online ammo sales. You know, ammo's back. Have you noticed this yourself?
I have, too. I always check the market and see at like ammobuy.com to see where what the prices are running and things like that. But I am getting a ton of ones from Clark Armory, Fin Feather and Fur, all sorts of stuff that are just, you know, solicitations. And I look at them. And if I suppose if I click on them, or those are probably mostly ones that I have purchased something from in the past and I'm on their mailing list, you know. But
I don't know. But 2 months ago, I got an offer from a company for 9mm when you couldn't find it anywhere. And unfortunately, I paid like way too much money. When I got it, I got a case of Macedonian 9mm. Hey, it shoots, you know.
Well, as long as it's
Macedonian.
As long as it's 9x19 and not something like 9x17 and or 9x18 Makarov, and you go, oh my God, now I got to go buy a gun to shoot this stuff. So.
Or sell it to Tom from Detroit. I think he's got the Makarov.
Do you know, I have done that in the past where I have gotten ammo or gotten cartridges, like, you know, empty spent cartridges and stuff, and I don't have a gun to shoot it, and I think, I've got so much of this, I have to go get a gun to shoot this now. So.
All right, you have a great day.
Okay, thanks Ed. Thanks for calling. Yeah, I'll look that up at the break and see about the Turkish Browning High Power. And I want to say that that I kind of like the fit and finish. That's one thing. The Brownings were very, very nice, and so they were just like you know, absolutely straight lines, and fit and finish was perfect with the wood to the grip to the grip frames and stuff, just outstanding. Let's see. So I was talking about the Crimson Trace Laser 250 laser saddle. Well, what the heck is that? Do you know what? It is a laser that goes on and around the like a saddle would. Think of a saddle on the horse's back on shotguns, on home defense shotguns. And it's got a great There are a couple of different buttons that you can touch that turn it on, turn it off. I mean, it's just outstanding. And it's got they actually have it where they've got the laser saddle's most pressure pad is angled where the left-handed users can reach it with their thumb too. So it not only has a button that you can get like with your trigger finger and stuff, but it has a spot where a left-handed shooter can also get to it. So they were thinking pretty neat with that. But the idea is that these Crimson Trace lasers are, we're not talking red dot, we're talking an actual laser with a point, you know, a laser dot that'll show up on the target. And it's meant to be for home defense shotguns because you might be carrying it in a low, kind of a low ready position. And if you have to fire, and by the way, in the dark, you may have difficulty even seeing with a ghost ring sight or an illuminated sight or something. But with a laser, you put that dot on the target and you're all set. And I want to say I am very impressed with this. I do have a 590 that I think that would fit on very nicely, and they're reasonably priced. Let's see, the Mossberg 12 gauge and 20 gauges, they're $194. For the Remington 870s and the TAC 14s, they are $219, and you can actually get them for the Mossbergs also with a green dot. a green laser. So, and that's $249. So that's very reasonable. Well, this is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WAM Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. We'll be back for the second half of Trigger Talk in just a minute.
WAM Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back, and I was just sitting here looking up the Turkish high power, the MCP-35, and it's made by a company called Girsan, G-I-R-S-A-N. And they're talking about being true to the original design, although it does look very good, and it's 15+1, and it's a steel framed 9mm, which by the way is kind of nice. I've got a I think it's a 5906, a Smith & Wesson 5906, and a Beretta 92FS that are both very heavy stainless steel, and they're a pleasure to shoot because they, especially when it's loaded with 15 rounds of 9mm, it's heavy. And you shoot it, and it absorbs that recoil. It is just a delight to shoot. Back on target for a follow-up shot very quickly. Very nice. And so this Browning High Power I would expect to be the same. Now, I do note when I'm looking at it that it is this one from Turkey is it's a matte finish instead of a blued finish, you know, a shiny blued finish like the Brownings were. And FN made them for Browning, and they quit making them in 2017. So it was actually 4 years ago that they stopped making them. And then they, you know, they finished the with the inventory that they had by about 18, and then they haven't been available. But now there are some companies making them in the Philippines and Hungary, but most lastly, to relate to what Ed from Ypsilanti said, the Turkish one, the Girsan, G-I-R-S-A-N, MCP-35. It has a MSRP of $528 in the U.S., and I want to say that's always a little high on these things, so probably $499 or $459 or something, so it'd be less. So pretty cool. Let's see. So I was just going through this this story about this laser, the LS250 laser saddle, and I do think that would be a outstanding. And by the way, they make them also to fit the Shockwave and also the Remington Tac 14, which is the, you know, the little ones that have like they have a stock. They're actually meant to be a pistol style. Where they have a pistol grip, looks like a femur actually. It's like a bone on the end of the shotgun, but they are meant to be fired from down in a low position. They don't even have a stock on them. So to have a laser saddle on those that can then be fired from a low ready kind of position would be an outstanding addition to a home defense gun. So anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. Let's see. I was just reading an article, and you know, it amazes me about the gun laws and things around the world. And by the way, did you notice? Oh, didn't they? When was it? Was it last week we were talking about in Norway? They just had a bow and arrow mass shooting. Okay, and they just had a minister of parliament in England stabbed to death. There is a common thread there. Not that anybody's nothing to see there. Did they all happen to be Islamic converts or Islamists? But you know, there's nothing to see there. So the thing is that, and by the way, I don't think that they care about the laws over there anyway, because I think it's already illegal to bow and arrow somebody to death, right? Yeah, probably. Or to stab somebody to death, but no, we can't have guns, okay? But the thing is that in the UK now, they've just added for their gun licensing forms for legal ownership, which they have, but you got to jump through all sorts of hoops. They just added 6 more pages of medical forms that you have to have. So now, you know, and just imagine this stuff here too. You know, we see already where I went through this with my father recently when he was in his decline, and we were talking to various people, and the doctors would ask about, are there any guns in the home? And I want to say, none of your business, okay? Shut up. But I would say, yes. but they're stored safely. The point is that they're trying to get their foot in the door here with this legal, forms and the whole red flag laws. And then pretty soon, and asking on your when you have a yearly checkup or something, oh, do you have any guns? Are they stored correctly? Are they none of your frickin' business? Okay. Let's see. What else was my next story? Oh, I was reading a story, and this one I have some personal experience on. And I do think that everybody probably has done this at some time. You go out to get a range bag, a new range bag. And I started out with a pretty small one. And the small one was, it held like 4 pistols and 16 mags or something like that. It's, 18 inches by a foot. And I thought, oh, man, I need a bigger range bag than this, okay? So I got a bigger range bag, okay? And then I loaded it up, and then I realized this thing is so heavy, I can't even carry it to the range anymore. So I went back to my small bag. And so I was reading a story, and it talks about the top range bags and stuff. This one called a Smith & Wesson M&P Officer, and then another one called a Bulldog Tactical Mole, and all these great big range bags. Now, there is one that's kind of bigger, too. It's called a GPS Handgunner Backpack. But then I don't know that I like the idea of having it as a backpack, and it's got a handle on it. I think it's got, like, wheels on it, too. I do see guys at the range sometimes carrying their guns, especially, like, if they're going back to the tactical bays or something like that. And they'll have, like, the little – it'll look like the little carry-on luggage from at the airport, you know. It's got wheels and an extendable handle and stuff. I'm going, oh, well, I could maybe see that if they got a whole bunch of equipment that they're going to take back and they're going to shoot for several hours. And so they got a ton of ammo and ton of guns and stuff like that. But just as a matter of course, having a very big range bag is not very comfortable. And so I'd like to know if you guys have experienced that. I kind of like a small one. And so when I see these ones that they're going, oh, this is the latest and greatest, and it carries, so many guns and so much ammo. And oh, gosh, you got to have big muscles to use that. So let's see. And the next story that I was going to talk about, oh, this is something that we can't ignore today. And this has to do with Alec Baldwin. But we got a call here. We got Mark from Howell on Laser Sights. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you today, Dick?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Mark. So what's
good.
What's your comment on laser sights?
Well, I'm not carrying something on my hip, but what I have, I've been popping off a few shots in the back 40 here, is my AR-15 9mm TAC-9 today. It's a Tennessee Arms Company lower receiver on it. And I wanted to talk about this adjustable green laser sight I have on. It's actually rechargeable. I can plug this little doodad that takes a single AA battery. I plug it into the outlet. I can plug it right into the back of my laser. This thing is rechargeable.
Neat.
Yeah. And it comes with a little adapter, kind of like an old-fashioned coil phone cord, on your old phone.
Yep.
So it's got some flexibility. And you can put your firearm, say, on the countertop or something. You can plug this thing in to the outlet and then plug it into the back of the laser sight right on the firearm, and it's rechargeable. So
that's
pretty
neat.
Cool.
I actually got my first pocket flashlight that has a built-in charging, like a little magnetic thing that you just touch it to it, and I find that to be convenient. I don't know if it would be as convenient to have a firearm on it. You know what I mean? You have to leave it out then while it's recharging, right?
Let's see. I'm looking at my mount. I mean, if I wanted to take it out of the mount, I could and do it that way. Or if you had a couple of them, which might not be a bad idea. Have a couple of these. You could use them on different firearms, perhaps, because it gets in the kit here. I've got additional mounts for different firearms, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so it might be nice to have a backup where you could have it plugging in, you know, charging, and then you don't actually have to have the firearm sitting out, you know.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Well, cool.
Now,
so you're firing.
I'm looking for the manufacturer, and it says made in, like Donald Trump would say, China. I can't see a manufacturer name on the box. It says LaserScope on it. But I'll tell you what, the green dot really, when you take a red dot outside in the daylight, you're not going to see it. This thing, I could go out right now in the sunshine and shine it on a tree trunk at 100 yards, and I'll see the green dot, you know, looking into the, you know, shadows of the woods, that is.
I know. I got to say, there is definitely, like, if I was going to get, I mentioned that laser saddle product, I would probably pop the extra, you know, $30 to get the green laser instead of the red one. And same thing with a green dot. I have a couple that are, they have both red and green, and I like the green in the daylight better. It's certainly better, more easy for your eye to pick it out, isn't it?
Indeed. I highly recommend those for if you're going to have this is kind of like my bug out gun, something I could fit in the backpack. You know, it's got an adjustable rear. It's actually the pistol, so it's not it's got the strap for the forearm and all that. But, you know, it's kind of like my bug out gun. Throw it in the backpack if things hit the fan. I can take that with a few other pieces and the holsters and things like that. What's nice about it is I've got the 30 round Glock clip on it, and, and basically, you know, with 9mm ammo, you can carry more. You know, if you carry a bigger caliber, well, you're not going to carry as much ammunition.
Yeah.
Well, and it's more bulkier and weight wise, you're going to be weighted down.
Yeah,
so
that's why a lot of people are liking the 9mm, the small double stacks now with that hold 15 and stuff, and they're small. And it is amazing that, and you don't think about that necessarily, but 15 rounds of 45 weighs a lot more than 15 rounds of 9mm, so it does make a difference.
Indeed, and this is the Glock 33, which is compatible with other Glock configuration magazines. And what's nice about it is you can get them available. And I heard you talking about your friend calling in from the club out there a week or so ago, and they said they're allowing those, because they're becoming more popular, to bring these AR-9 mils in and shoot at the range too.
Yep. The pistol caliber carbines are very pop. They are hot now. Everybody wants one. So.
Yeah, and I don't have a scope, or, you know, I got the flip-up sights on this, which are really nice. I got the really heavy-duty aluminum ones, so they're really heavy-duty. I mean, they'll take a beating and, you know, like the Timex commercial, take a licking and keep on ticking, you know what I mean?
John Cameron Swayze for Timex watches, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I bought it. Well, get on the Timex thing. I bought one at Myers here a couple of years ago, and the battery already went flat on it. I don't think they is, you know, pumped up to what they used to be. But I will say that I turned this thing on in the house one night, the green laser, to see what was going to do. And, boy, that thing is, wow, it's like a coming out of the Star Trek phaser on the starship, you know.
Pretty cool.
I got a mirror at the end of the hallway. I forgot, you know, it's got like an Indian imprint in the mirror, and I was at the one end of the hallway, and I hit that mirror not knowing it, and that thing bounced back above my head and hit the wall behind me. I says, boy, that it was intense.
Yep. Well, thank you for the call today, Mark. It's nice talking to you. Thanks for the texts I get from you periodically. I enjoy them, so. Thank you for calling and listening today. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I love your show. Have a good day, Dick.
Thanks, Mark. Yep. We have Tom from Detroit online about ammo and detonation. What's going on, Tom?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of detonation, where if you, in a large rifle case or even a medium or small rifle case, if there's not enough powder in there, that it'll actually go over pressure. Way over pressure.
I have heard of that, and that's one of the reasons that you often will try to have a you're better off with a load and a powder in a hand load that will fill the case up as opposed to being, you know, like a tenth of the case, because it's much more critical to the mass, the amount of powder in there. I have heard of that, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard about it for years and years, but what I had heard was just make sure there's at least over half of the case full. And I know that Hodgdon on their webpage, their powder manufacturer, they have some loads that they've tested, reduced loads, and they even have some with some limited loads with just small amount of pistol powder. They have some subsonics for larger caliber, like 30-06. I think they have a couple of loads in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd want to stick right to that bullet. But what I was wondering, you know, I tested some of that Turkish ammo, and I think it's over pressure. That real old Turkish 8mm, oh. I'm wondering if that has something to do with detonation. What I've heard people are doing, and I started doing it myself, is I'm reducing, I'm pulling those apart, and I'm reducing them 10% before I shoot them, and they shoot real nice then. But
I don't. I have some Turkish head stamped 8mm ammo that I've had for years when they were selling a bunch of it at like Dunham's. Okay, do you remember they'd sell like a 50 round bandolier for like $4.99 or something like that?
Well, I remember at the gun shows they were selling I think either 1300 or 1400 round cases, big tuna tins, for around $50.
Yeah, so really cheap.
I mean, there's a lot of it out there.
Now they're likely corrosive, but also, do you know what I had heard? And I never pulled it apart. Now it'd be interesting to pull it apart and see that some of those early rounds, especially now that was Spanish Civil War kind of stuff. Okay. And that was in 1933, 36, 37. And I've got stuff with head stamps that say that. And they had even mentioned that some of the companies were using celluloid as a powder and that they were actually using ground up movie film and they were using it as powder. Now, was this a regular powder that you saw in there?
Oh yeah, it's a flake powder, and it seems to be real brittle. See, what I did when I took them apart, there's a real big deep crimp on there. I drill a hole in a 2x4, and I stick the bullet in there, and I rock it back and forth to bell mouth that case mouth,
right?
Because you know I'm thinking that powder is so old that it's brittle, and if I just use my kinetic puller, that it's going to start breaking up those grains and increase the speed further,
yeah.
You know, by making more surface
right.
area.
Right.
So then I just dump the powder out, and you know, then I have to re-neck size it, and I actually made a little tool, so you know, because you can't use your regular mandrel because you can't knock the primer out.
Right.
But I took some of those just for kicks, and I made them into 308, the brand.
Oh.
And, you know, it was very corrosive. You know, it's the primers that are corrosive.
Right.
And, yeah, they worked great.
Interesting. I, you're going into a lot of depth there on for old ammo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's where the hobby of hand loading and everything is. So you never run out of things you can do, right?
Yeah, I'm wondering about the physics. You know, I have never heard anybody to date that has ever been able to explain the physics behind detonation, how putting less powder in a case causes a greater pressure.
I could see, though, the fact that that by using less powder in a case, that that if you're using something that takes a three-quarters of a load, you know, of the space or all the space up, then let's say you're using 50 grains of something, that would be much easier to be on par for, you know, on the correct weight of the powder. Whereas if you were trying to use a really a powder that was only, say, 15 grains, it would be much more critical to and so much easier to overpressure, because if you were using 15 grains, then you could be 10% over with just, you know, a grain and a half more, right? So just the scale of things, I could understand that. But I don't know about the actual, it's interesting about the actual capacity of the cartridge and how that affects it. Interesting. Well, Tom, you come up with fun things today.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you very much, and for listening. I get calls from Ed from Ypsilanti and Tom from Detroit, and you know, that's what makes it kind of like a family here. We have a lot of people who call in regularly and feel comfortable doing it, and I'm very happy for that. So, thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
And new members of the family too. I was at the York Township Hall this week, and talked to a new employee there, and I met her, and she goes, "Dick Kupke, now do you know so and so? That name is familiar." And I said, "Yes." I said, "But most people, when they hear the name, it's because they've heard it on the radio, and I have a radio show." She goes, That's it. My husband listens to you." So I thought that was funny. It is a family. And actually, as we said around here, and our founding person, which was Linda Hughes, she always talked about it being a whamily here, the whamily. And we really are like that. So let's see. The other thing I was talking about, you can't ignore this week. It's on the news and everybody's horrified. And Alec Baldwin was out filming a movie, an independent movie in New Mexico, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he discharged a prop gun. And the prop gun, and there's a whole bunch of discussion around this, because somebody said, "Oh, it had a live round in the gun." Other people said it had had a live round in it, and it had a slug in the barrel, and then the blank fired it off. I want to say, and then they're all horrified, and they're out there going, "Oh, well, now we need to eliminate the use of prop guns on websites because they are on movies because there are computers. You can just, let them hold their finger out like a finger gun, and then you can put a computer-generated gun in there. No reason to have real guns." Well, I want to say, when it comes, do you remember, was it Brandon Lee back in 93 or something like that, where he was shot by a prop gun, and it had like a wax plug or something in the end of the cartridge? It was a blank, and it had a cardboard plug or a wax plug or something. But you know what? That is still a projectile. And if you are firing a cardboard plug or a wax plug or anything out of there, that can enter the body and cause massive damage. So Hollywood, you're all about the guns and the movies and glorifying all the violence and all that stuff in the movies. But then, something happens, and I actually fired a gun and it hurt somebody? That's terrible. Well, it is terrible, and it's because you're not following proper procedures and stuff. And don't use it as another anti-gun thing here. We've got Marshall from Canton on pistol. Uh-oh, we're about out. Go ahead, Marshall, real quick.
They got small pistol primers at Cabela's at Dundee's. I was by there yesterday at 1 o'clock, and they had about 40,000, so I bought 1,000.
Small pistol primers, they're hard to find, so that's good news. Yeah. Did they have any powder there?
No powder.
Well, we're halfway there with the primers, though. Very good. Thanks. Thank you, Marshall. Appreciate it.
Yeah, bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Oh, gosh, that's what we like to hear. Something's starting to creep back into the store again. I am still looking for Hodgkin Little Gun, and I keep thinking I'm going to find some. And then I check, and it goes out of stock. So, and I've got a 50 Beowulf that I got to load for this fall. So I'm down to just a handful of rounds. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. I'll see you next week.